This is VOA News. I'm Jim Bertel. Iran and the United States are trading threats following the death of Iran's top general. Reuters' Julian Satterwhite reports.
Thousands gathered Sunday morning in southern Iran for the funeral of the general killed in a U.S. drone strike. Mourners wept as a truck carried Qasem Soleimani's body through the streets of Ahvaz. Feelings were running high in the capital too. In Tehran, lawmakers chanted death to America in a session to discuss the killing. Now world capitals wait anxiously to see how Iran will respond. Many have called on both sides to calm the rhetoric. But Donald Trump doesn't appear to be listening. In a series of tweets, the US president vowed to hit 52 sites if Iran retaliates. He says the number represents the 52 Americans held hostage at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran in 1979. The question is whether Iran will heed the warning.
That is Reuters' Julian Satterthwaite reporting. Cybersecurity experts say with Iran vowing revenge, a cyber attack is a non-military way to get back at the U.S. AP's Julie Walker reports.
From cyber attacks on our U.S. banks and other financial institutions to our infrastructure, Iran has done it before and will do it again, says cybersecurity expert Sandra Joyce of FireEye.
They need to attempt to create some symbolic or meaningful action as the revenge that they've been talking about, but it really needs to land short of provoking this full military response by the U.S.
She also says they may attack our elections with disinformation campaigns as they've done in the past.
In some cases, we've seen them actually impersonate political candidates.
Joyce says they can use those cyber attacks to grow anti-American sentiment. I'm Julie Walker.
And from Washington, this is VOA News. Iraq's parliament has passed a resolution calling for foreign troops to leave the country. This comes in the wake of a U.S. airstrike that killed Iran's top military commander near Baghdad's airport last week. The resolution calls on the government to work to end the presence of any foreign troops on Iraqi soil and prohibit them from using its land, airspace, or water for any reason. Australia continues to battle wildfires that have scorched millions of hectares across the three states. Cooler temperatures and lighter winds Sunday brought little relief from the fires that firefighters have battled for weeks. Reuters' Adam Reed has more.
Finally, some respite for residents in southern parts of Australia, as cooler temperatures and some much-needed rain mean an easing for now from the devastating bushfires that have raged throughout the region. Evacuations are continuing as thick smoke still hangs in the air. In the town of Eden in New South Wales, residents hung on to what belongings they could and waited for buses and boats to take them to safety. Similar scenes in other small towns across the state saw residents wait for news of what remains of their homes and businesses. Initial estimates put damaged or destroyed properties in the hundreds, but authorities said that the mass evacuations by residents of at-risk areas appear to have prevented major loss of life.
That is Reuters' Adam Reed reporting. Somali militant group Al-Shabaab says it attacked a military base used by U.S. and Kenyan military teams Sunday. The U.S. military's Africa Command says initial reports reflect damage to equipment and infrastructure, and the situation remains tense. In a statement, Al-Shabaab said it had taken control of part of the camp and it had inflicted casualties in the attack. Kenyan Defense Forces also said in a statement they fought off the attackers and four militants were killed. Scuffles erupted between police and protesters in Hong Kong on Sunday, with dozens of arrests made. Lam Chuk Ting organized today's march.
I don't think any changes for the head of the liaison office of Hong Kong may change the policy of Beijing towards Hong Kong. But we Hong Kong people urge the international community keep supporting us, keep supporting our democratic movement.
Organizers estimated 10,000 people took part in the march, while police estimated a crowd of 2,500 at its peak. Officials say at least 24 people were killed and 23 injured after a building in Cambodia collapsed, trapping workers under rubble. The seven-story concrete building collapsed on Friday in the coastal town of Kep, about 160 kilometers southwest of the capital, Phnom Penh. For more on any of today's stories, please visit us at voanews.com. I'm Jim Bertel, VOA News.
evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
They are aware that currently focus is on retaliatory attack as a result of what happened in Baghdad. So to them, this is an opportunity for them also to rebrand themselves internationally.
The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab claims responsibility for attacking a military base U.S. and Kenya military teams used Sunday.
Challenges are there, yes, but we are saying we are going to face them, and we hope and believe we shall transcend those challenges. So, nonetheless, we are on the move. So we keep moving, we keep engaging, we want to observe the law, and we keep saying we don't want any confrontation with the security personnel and all of that, but nonetheless, we are going to move with our engagement.
Bobi Wine, a popular Ugandan parliamentarian, plans to embark on consultations beginning Monday as he prepares to challenge President Yoweri Museveni in next year's presidential poll.
He uses the military to declare himself a winner. That's not a mark of a Democrat. So he's politicking because next year won't clearly be a bed of roses for him. He knows the challenge at hand, and therefore he's trying to keep relevant, despite the fact that openly opposition to his role is increasing day by day.
And President Yoweri Museveni continues his six-day jungle walk to retrace the route his guerrilla forces used to seize power decades ago. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Somali militant group Al-Shabaab says it attacked a military base used by U.S. and Kenyan military teams Sunday. The station is situated in Lamu County along the Kenya-Somali border. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
A cloud of black smoke will be seen rising from a military base in the coastal town of Lamu. The base hosts Kenya and American forces. Somali Islamist group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for the Sunday attack. In a statement, the U.S. military command in Africa, known as AFRICOM, confirmed some of the smoke could have originated from the destruction of equipment at the base. Lamu County Commissioner Irungu Masharia confirmed the attack and says the area is not yet secured.
Between 4 and 5, there was that attack at that military base. That airstrip, officers engaged in the intruders, and it has continued until around 6. But the situation has now calmed down, but the area is still not secure for us to go to that place. But life has returned to normal. Officers are on the ground.
In a statement, Al-Shabaab said it had taken control of part of the camp and it had inflicted casualties in the attack. Kenya Defense Forces also said in a statement they fought off the attackers, and 4 militants were killed. One witness, who didn't want to be named for fear of reprisal, spoke to VOA about how he was woken up by explosions, followed by hours of gunfire sound. We had heavy explosions at around 4, he said. In the beginning, we thought these were the usual explosions we hear around the area. Then we saw a fire and thick black smoke. Then, for a while, it was quiet. At around 6, then we had gun attacks up to 8. It was at that time we saw a plane dropping something that looked like bombs. Witnesses told VOA there was still a heavy security presence in and around the area. Security officers could be seen asking some civilians to produce their identification documents. Richard Tuta, a security expert based in Nairobi, says Al-Shabaab are seeking recognition as U.S.-Iranian tension grows after the U.S. airstrike that killed the Iranian Quds Force commander, General Qasem Soleimani.
They are aware that currently focus is on retaliatory attack as a result of what happened in Baghdad. So to them, this is an opportunity for them also to rebrand themselves internationally. That's why, despite the fact that they knew very well that they were going to lose, but they had to do it in order to rebrand themselves internationally.
The attack comes days after Al-Shabaab fighters killed 3 people on a passenger bus in Lamu County. The area that borders Somalia has been the target of security operations for the last 5 years. Al-Shabaab has carried out wave of attacks against Kenyan security forces and civilians in the coast and northeastern region. Mohammed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
Meanwhile, for the latest development, I reach Mwenda Mbijiwe, a Kenyan security analyst.
This is an area that is, you know, frequented by terrorists. Actually, the main reason that our Kenyan military in the past crossed the border to go and pursue Al-Shabaab in Somalia was because in this area, the terrorists had kidnapped a French on a tourist trip to Kenya and took them to Somalia. And so this is an area that has had terrorist activities for the longest. And so them coming to the base today, well, of course, it's surprising that they're there at a military base, furthermore, one that has American forces. But again, it's not quite a big surprise because we are used to Al-Shabaab operations in this part of our country. Suffice to say that it's not so far from the Somali border. So that's an area where Al-Shabaab basically has been. But interestingly, is that most of the fighters in the force in that area are not necessarily foreign fighters. They are Kenyan young men that have been recruited and trained into the Al-Shabaab terrorist group.
But Mwenda, some people are suggesting that with the latest development of the U.S. strike against the Iranian army commander, it's surprising that there wasn't any heightened alert at this base, particularly when people are aware that the army base is used by both Kenyan and U.S. military forces.
Sure. And since that attack, security has been beefed up around the city of Nairobi. Malls and places have increased security. I hear across the country, military bases and police bases have all been asked to be a little vigilant. However, I think the surprise came in the fact that there has not been a lot of allegiance by terrorist groups to Iran. As you know, Iran is Shiite Muslim faith. And so not many terrorist groups subscribe to Shiite faith, especially in Africa. Most terrorist groups in Africa are of the Sunni descent of the Islamic faith. And so I think that caught intelligence advisors by surprise. But again, that they attacked this morning, then it means one thing. For sure, the commander that was killed, like President Trump said, has had a lot of influence on terrorist activities around the world, and particularly a U.S. official has said that commander that was killed had been funding and organizing terrorist attacks in Kenya. And this is a clear indication that that position is correct and that Al-Shabaab surely gets some form of support, whether financial or technical support from Iran. And that is a clear message today.
What has been the response of the Kenyan Defense Force so far? Because I understand that a nearby civilian airport has been opened for use following the repelling of the attack by the Kenyan forces.
Yes, earlier in the morning they had blocked the flights, but they have since reopened them. But the area of the base that was attacked is next to the bush, next to the forest, and that's where the American Special Forces are located. So they came right through the forest, over the fence, and hit the airstrip part of the U.S. Military that has U.S. military planes. So they burnt a couple of planes. I'm sure you've seen the photos making rounds in social media. But then there was no human casualties. There was speed in repelling them. And the Kenyan defense forces on their side of the base also took cover. And photos of course have been making rounds on social media of the soldiers taking on the defensive position. So there was no human life loss, but the equipment and a couple of military facilities were hurt. However, the military has since repelled them.
I understand that a few days ago there was another attack. Who was responsible for the attack and what has been the response of the government so far in reassuring the public following today's attack that they are safe?
Well, the attack, yes, indeed happened a couple of days ago. The terrorists attacked a bus. A public bus, shot at it, but the driver managed to drive way off past the shooters until the wheels completely became flat and they couldn't move no more. But that's an area, as I said, of course, they killed two people in the bus, but others, were able to disembark and hide in the bushes until rescue came. So it's an area that is infested with terrorists, as I said, and unfortunately, most of them are local terrorists. They are sons of our country that have been radicalized and made violent extremists. So, yeah, indeed, it's an area that has terrorist activities most of the time.
Mwenda Mbijiwe is a Kenyan security analyst. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Robert Kyagulanyi, popularly known as Bobi Wine, is a Ugandan parliamentarian who plans to begin consultations with his supporters beginning Monday. Bobi Wine, the leader of the People Power Movement, has announced plans to challenge President Yoweri Museveni in the 2021 general election. To learn more about his consultation plans, I read Joel Senyonyi, spokesperson for the People Power Movement.
All right. So according to our laws, our Presidential Elections Act, Section 3 thereof, it provides that anybody who is desirous of becoming president of Uganda can write to the Electoral Commission notifying them about his or her intentions. And in the same vein, notify them about their desire to go around the country consulting with Ugandans about the same matter. And so, following the law, we wrote to the Electoral Commission to begin our countrywide consultations engaging Ugandans about this subject matter that we have somebody that is aspiring to become president. That's the Honorable Robert Kyagulanyi Ssentamu, also known as Bobi Wine. And so the Electoral Commission wrote back to us and told us, of course, to follow all the laws, notify the authorities, police, and so on. And we are doing all of that. We have done all of that, actually, notified police, notified the local authorities. And so we are hitting the ground running tomorrow, Monday, and we're going to begin in the constituency of Bobi Wine. He will pretty much be saying goodbye to the constituents since he's now going to vie for the presidency. And after that, we'll go across the country, the rest of the country, consulting with Ugandans about the same subject matter.
What feedback have you gotten so far in anticipation of the walk on Monday, particularly in terms of his decision to challenge and wrestle power legally from President Yoweri Museveni, who is also embarking on a six-day jungle walk?
Yeah, so because our regime is a dictatorial one, Mr. Museveni will want to go across the country, engage with Ugandans, interact with them, and yet he does not want anyone else to do that. And so, yes, we have had some challenges here and there. Some of the venues we had booked initially to use for our consultation, security folks went and intimidated them, so they withdrew consent, and yet we had even deposited monies and all the different things. So those are challenges that we are grappling with, given that we are operating in a dictatorial setting. But nonetheless, we keep moving. We are insistent on following and observing the law, but we'll keep moving and make sure that our work gets done of consulting Ugandans.
What does this work entail, if I may ask you?
Yeah, so majorly, it's to go and interact with Ugandans. So we'll be at particular venues where many people will have come, and then we'll tell them about the intentions of Honorable Kyagulanyi, Bobi Wine, to run. And then we'll ask for feedback. You know, we'll have them ask questions, for example, telling us what their view is, what their thoughts are. We're going to interact with them. So they'll give us feedback. Feedback, ask questions, and all of that. That's the kind of setting it's going to be like.
People have expressed concern that Robert Kyagulanyi or Bobi Wine could be putting his life in danger by visibly trying to challenge President Museveni, looking at the fact that opposition protests have usually turned violent with clashes with the police. What steps are you going to take to ensure that tomorrow's walk does not turn violent?
Yeah, so obviously, it's risky stuff when you decide that you're now going to go against a dictator like ours. Mr. Museveni has been in power for coming to 34 years now. He's pretty much in charge of the army. He even calls it his army, says the army is mine. The money is his, you know, and all of these different things. And as the world knows, Bobi Wine was brutalized to near death in Arua. And so it's risky. But then we want change. Our country is yearning for change. Every part of the country that we have gone to, Ugandans keep saying, we want change. And so we cannot back down and be fearful because of the challenges that come with all of this. The challenges are there, yes, but we are saying we are going to face them, and we hope and believe we shall transcend those challenges. So nonetheless, we are on the move. So we keep moving, we keep engaging, we want to observe the law, and we keep saying we don't want any confrontation with the security personnel and all of that. But nonetheless, we are going to move with our engagement.
Joel Senyonyi is the spokesperson for the Ugandan Opposition People Power Movement. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Meanwhile, a Ugandan opposition parliamentarian says the six-day jungle walk President Yoweri Museveni is embarking on appears to be a public relations exercise. Mathias Mpuuga says it is unlikely Ugandans will learn anything new from the president who has ruled the East African country since 1986. His remarks come as the president began his walk through the jungle aimed to retrace the route which enabled his guerrilla forces to overthrow General Okele Lutua's government. For reaction to the president's walk, I reach opposition parliamentarian Mathias Mpuuga.
The walk is not just a comedy, but a walk of shame, because the first port to which...